Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Thank you very much for joining us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've already been listening the previous hour or the previous segment, well, I'm really proud of you. That means you're not only smart, but you're interested in getting smarter, because that's our goal here. That's the reason why we have really smart people join us on the show, like our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, who is here even as we speak. Hi, Joan.
Hi there, Jim. How are you doing?
Doing great. Happy Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah.
Very
did
good.
Did I miss anything?
No, it's funny you should bring that up because we're having kind of a controversy over that subject here in Washington.
Yeah, over the tree.
Yeah, what is it called? Is it called the Christmas tree, the holiday tree, what?
Well, you know, where do you come down on this, Joan? You're Catholic, right?
Well, you know, I was thinking about it. I haven't minded the word holiday, but then I realized when people say Happy Hanukkah and Happy Kwanzaa, they don't say Happy Holidays. They name the holiday.
Right.
And the holiday we're talking about here is Christmas.
Right.
It's not...
Well, it's the traditionally celebrated one.
It's not a Halloween tree or a Thanksgiving tree. It's
right.
It's a Christmas tree.
Yeah. In terms of the tree, it's a Christmas tree. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and I think the quote unquote national tree that's lit by the president, I think, is still being called the holiday tree. But apparently, the tree on Capitol Hill has been renamed back to Christmas tree.
Okay, good.
In case you're keeping score,
and so has the one in New York.
In New York, right?
And
the one at Rockefeller Center, which they snuck in and lit before the national tree was lit, because the national tree, I believe, is being lit tonight.
They do that every year, though, don't they?
They try, yes.
Now, and so is the tree in Boston.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a big controversy about that. The Newfoundlanders, the Newfies, sent a tree down to Boston because they feel, you know, for 100 years or 200 years, they've had this little, you know, indebtedness to Massachusetts for something. I've forgotten what happened, but something they did. They were really nice to a Newfie once, and so it's been this long tradition, 100 or more years maybe tradition, of sending a Newfoundland tree down to Boston.
Oh.
And on the way, though, on its way down, it was determined that they were going to call it a holiday tree, not a Christmas tree. The guy who cut it literally out of his backyard, he literally cut this out of his backyard, said, if I had known that, I wouldn't have cut the darn thing down.
I thought you were going to say he turned around and went back.
Well, he wasn't in charge of the delivery. I think he would like to have. But
sure.
The good news is, before it landed, apparently, before it got stuck in the ground down there, apparently they came to their senses.
They came to their senses,
and
good.
Now it's called a Christmas tree.
Oh, good.
But you know, Joan, I was talking to someone earlier in the previous hour about this, Rich Galen, who's a Jewish of the Jewish persuasion.
Yes.
And what I said was, we send out happy holiday cards. Maybe you have a peaceful and happy holiday season. And I don't feel like I'm doing, as a Christian, I don't feel like there's anything wrong with that. I don't mind saying, as we talk to my, you know, I have friends all over the world with a lot of different religions, and it's better for me to say, hope you have a great holiday season.
Well, and sure.
But I don't change the name of my Christmas tree.
No, because it's a Christmas tree. But if I'm sending a card to a person who I know is not a Christian, I'm not going to send them a Christmas card.
Right.
I'll send them a holiday card.
Right. But I don't understand... I don't see why we should. We don't have to denounce Christmas.
I don't. Well, or eliminate the name completely.
To just be tolerant.
Right.
See, I don't have a problem if I walk into a store, and the greeter says Happy Holidays. As a Christian, I don't. That doesn't bother me.
No.
But it does bother some people.
Oh, it does.
Yeah. You know, Well, of course, if they've taken any mention of Christmas off the table. You know, I guess I understand that being, I would be a little indignant about that. But just if somebody just says Happy Holidays, I think that's very appropriate myself.
Sure, because they don't know what your persuasion
exactly.
is.
Exactly. And if there's one thing we need more of in this country, by everybody, bingo, yep. Say that again.
If there's one thing we need more of, it's tolerance in this country and others as well.
Everywhere, no question about it.
Sure.
And so well said there. Okay, let's get into the letter. And there is there a truly a pension crisis coming, Joan?
Well, we say there is a crisis, but we don't think that disaster is going to strike. However, it means taking some action, which we talk about in our item here.
Well, let's set it up a little bit with what's
sure.
already happened.
Mm-hmm.
United Airlines went into bankruptcy. Where did their pensioners go?
To the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp.
Which is a government-funded organization set up to be a safety net under defined benefit pensioners.
Right, and defined benefit meaning the old traditional annuitized pension where you get your monthly check after you retire.
By golly. As long as you live, and ad infinitum almost.
Right, exactly.
And which has created a $1,500 ticket per car for every General Motors car that's sold.
Wow, I had not seen that.
$1,500 per
car. Wow.
And I'm not sure if it's the benefits, just the benefits, or how much that includes, how much of the pension and the health care and all that includes.
Oh, that could be the whole thing with the insurance.
but still, it's a number that takes your breath away.
Oh, sure.
$1,500 per car.
Yeah.
So my what I'm getting at is it's already happened with United.
Right.
Delta is in bankruptcy right now, right?
Right.
Too. And
US
so
Air.
Of course, US Air, that's old news. But,
right.
but Delta's new news. United's fairly new news. And so the thing is that who knows what they're going to do with their pensioners.
Right.
I can't say
and
that.
In the auto industry, you don't just have GM, but you have the auto parts suppliers such as Delphi.
Delphi,
a lot
exactly.
of concern about those as well.
Well, they've just, that was where I was going. Thank you for that.
I'm sorry.
No, that's exactly why you're here, so I don't have to say everything. Delphi just took bankruptcy, went into Chapter 11.
Yeah, right.
And there's probably a good chance that their pensioners are going to wind up with Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp, which is underfunded, right?
Right.
It can't. It's not funded enough to handle all of these things that are going on. And Joan, here's my prediction. I told you I was going to have one.
Okay.
Give me a drum roll here. I predict that within 5 years, maybe, quite possibly less than that. At least one, maybe two, and possibly all three of the American car dealers, car manufacturers, will be in Chapter 11.
Wow.
Within 5 years. Now,
could you be a little more specific on that? You kind of hedged there a little bit.
No,
I'd like a definite number. May I have a definite number, please?
I think two of them.
Give me an at least.
Within 5 years, two of the three will be in Chapter 11.
Okay, that's good.
And see, a lot of people will talk. You know what? We got to quick a quick break. It's almost 20 after. We'll be right back after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride. We got a lot more really good stuff to talk about. Stay with us.
Only you.
Back, it's 23 after. I guess it's a Van Halen kind of day, right, Joan? It's a Van Halen kind of day. And that's not a bad thing at all, is it?
Not at all. Not to me.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. That's the lilting voice on the other end of the show. And I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. I'm the host and usually in charge, except one on the days that Joan's here. And by the way, folks, my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out. Subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Thank you to all of you who have been subscribing all over the world, literally all over the world. We got subscribers, Joan, this week, more, it seems like more than ever before. People tuning in to the show on the internet and checking out the website. And the internet is a magnificent way to reach people around the world, Joan.
No question.
You guys have a great website.
Saves on postage.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. and also, folks, don't forget to check out my blog. You can find it on the homepage. Also go directly there at jimsblog.biz, and you can subscribe. You can get it every day there, but we'll send it to you if you want to. That'll come every day, Monday through Friday, in the newsletter. And it's all free, thanks to our great partners, corporate partners, our sponsors. Joan, let's get back to this benefits thing. The average American wandering around out there who's not one of these pensioners,
right,
probably knows somebody who is a pensioner.
Probably.
Most Americans don't have a defined benefit plan like the majority, I think, don't have a defined benefit plan like, say, a government employee or retiree or a...
Or a Kiplinger employee.
Exactly, exactly. And so, so most people don't have that. And so if they don't, they're thinking, well, you know, why is this a big deal? Why is Jim and Joan even bringing this up? Well, Joan, this is, if my prediction comes to pass, then that means that little companies, not just the biggies, but the little companies will start doing this, like Delphi, which is smaller than GM. And this is going to be, I mean, somebody's going to say, who's going to pay for all these pension checks? And that means, Joan, it's going to come out of mine, your pocket, through taxes.
Well, but they also keep in mind, you can dump your pension on the PBGC if you feel like it. You could shut down your pension, but it doesn't mean you can hand it over to PBGC. It has to be underfunded, and you have to be in financial trouble.
But Chapter 11 pretty much is a good indication of financial trouble.
Right. But I'm sure
you're right.
Listeners understood that you'd have to be in
good
financial
point.
Straits.
Good point. No, but the thing is that's one of the reasons that these companies are in financial straits.
Is because one of the reasons, maybe,
yeah,
sure.
One of the reasons. And so, and you know, Chapter 11 can be as you know, as perverse as it may be, Joan. Chapter 11 is one way that companies shed responsibilities.
Well, sure, because Chapter 11 doesn't mean you're closing your company.
That means
you're restructuring.
And you can and you restructure without certain obligations, and when that happens, and if it starts happening like a little domino situation, Joan, it could get ugly, and so that's the reason why, folks, that we need to, you know, you need to know about these things, because at some point in time, Joan, you and I both know, at some point in time, Congress and the White House is going to have to make some decisions about who's going to pay for these things.
Right, and I have three words for you: saving.
Yeah, exactly.
The last time
an
industry crashed and burned and the government had to bail them out was the loan industry. And there, people are drawing parallels between that bailout and the possibility that there may be a bailout in this situation.
Joan, do you remember the ticket for the savings and loan? Do you remember what
No,
was?
I do not. It was big.
Yeah, it was big, but I'm telling you right now, it's going to be lunch money compared to what we're talking about now.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
I think so. Okay, so let's move over and talk about the current forecast. Folks, if you're not taking the Kiplinger letter, you're missing some really cool graphics, in addition to the other stuff. And they've got an outstanding little box that's always on the front page called Current Forecast. And this particular day is, this particular week, it's on economic issues like the GDP. Joan, what's it doing?
Right. Well, we're saying this year it's going to be up by 3.6% and then 3% next year.
Joan, 3% is absolutely rock solid.
Fantastic, yeah.
I mean, the U.S. is look. I mean, the EU, the old Europe, as Mr. Secretary Rumsfeld says, is looking at less than 1.5%, and we're double that. And that's the projection. It could be a little better, but Joan, with all the things that's happened to this country, hurricanes and everything, you guys are still saying this year is going to be 3.6.
Right. But if you were a glass half empty kind of guy, you would look at that and say, gee, it's not going to be as good next year.
Yeah. But the truth is, 3% could probably go a little ways to help with inflation.
Right.
Don't you think?
That's true. Yeah, good point.
And hold interest rates down a little bit, kind of ease things off a little bit. You know, if we could sit on 3% growth, Joan, the United States could continue to be the land of the rich, couldn't they?
The Goldilocks economy.
No question about it. Now, 3% is very very darn decent. Which, speaking of interest rates, Joan, we've got a few seconds before the break.
Okay.
The prime is rising to 7.25. Meaning they got one more meeting in December. That's what you guys are saying.
Then we say 8% in next year, which is getting up there.
Prediction, Joan.
Yes. Sorry.
Not on you, but a pox on that prediction. 29 after. We're going to take a quick break. We got more to come right after these messages with our good friend Joan, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blasingame. This show is brought to you by IBM, Office Depot, and Administaff.
Everybody's blue when they... And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Mr. Humble at your service. That's what Joan Pride always calls me. And Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kipling Editors. That's what you call me all the time, isn't it, Joan?
Right, sure.
Hey, Joan, you know what happened on this? You know what happened on this day in 1953?
No, but I'm afraid you're going to tell me.
Yeah, well, you know, Joan, you're going to want to know this as a public, as a member of the industry.
All right.
Playboy magazine was founded.
Oh, gee.
It was launched on this day in 1953.
Thanks.
You needed to know that, didn't you?
Oh. Real bad.
Don't they have just the best articles?
How would you know?
What? Well, you know, I saw one once, and it was just great. Anyway, this is a great day in history, folks. The Playboy magazine founded in 1953. Okay, Joan, you want to move on?
Sure, why not?
Okay, inflation.
Yes.
What's it going to do
bad.
Next year?
Well, it's gaining, we're saying. This year we're saying 4%, but next year we're saying 3%, so that's...
Because of the cooling off just a little bit of the economy. I mean, when I say cooling off, you know, Joan, we should point out cooling off means taking it down from a high boil.
Right, exactly.
You know, this is not simmer. This is not a simmering economy. This
avoiding
is,
overheating.
Exactly. There you go.
And so, thank you.
3% inflation, Joan. I'd rather it were under 3%, but we can handle that. And but the good news is, even if we don't like the number. We like
the trend.
Bingo. And that's going to help. And see, that's the reason why I'm going to take issue with your prediction about interest rates. I don't think they're going to keep raising them all the way to 5%.
You have the right to be wrong.
Well, you know what I always say, Joan. Tell them what I always say.
Let's see. You're not always right, but you're never in doubt.
Frequently wrong, but never
in doubt.
Exactly.
That's it.
Okay, what about employment? We've got 1.5 million new jobs this year, 2005, and what are you predicting for 2006?
We're saying more. We're saying 2 million new jobs in 2006.
Think about that.
Now your listeners are astute enough that they're kind of seeing the theme here.
They're highly intelligent, Joan.
Exactly, and astute.
So the theme, tell us what the theme is, Joan.
Well,
we're
the numbers together, we think next year might be actually a little, except for GDP, we think next year might actually be a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, Joan, that's the reason why with hiring 2 million more people next year, inflation coming down, I mean, 3% growth next year, to me, that bodes well for at least 3%, if not more.
Right.
It just seems to me. I mean, that's what my show.
Yeah.
Housing, you guys got it up just a little bit?
Or
is it off?
Well, we're saying a slight easing to 7.8. So it is going to pull back a little bit, but things were overheated enough that maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Absolutely. No, that's exactly. I think the news on housing is that there are, you know, some people say market bubbles. I think there are neighborhood bubbles, but there's no national real estate bubble.
Yeah, I don't see how there could be.
There is none. Retail sales still going to be steady. What's that going to look like next year?
Right. Well, we're saying 4%. So I'm assuming by the use of the word steady, that's pretty much what it was this year.
And in line with my prediction, a sort of a bellwether canary in the mineshaft of my prediction earlier, Joan, about the automobile industry, where are auto sales? In this whole list of forecasts, which one is the only one with an arrow?
Yeah, and it's, of course, this one. We're saying auto sales falling to 16.8 million in 2006. Now, we don't... a drop that is, but it is a drop.
Well, you know, I was reading recently that Ford, which you, as you know, bought Jaguar. They were predicting when they bought it, they would sell like 400,000 cars, Jaguars, that they would be able to grow that brand that much. I think next year they're planning to build 80,000.
Wow.
So the gasoline issue has gotten people spooked a little bit.
I think so. Sure.
And. As you know, Joan, the real moneymaker for the car companies are the trucks and SUVs.
And that's what's going to get, I would think.
That's what's getting hit. The light truck, light trucks maybe not so much because businesses are still going to buy, farmers and folks like that are still going to buy the light trucks. But SUVs, you know, when you've got some soccer mom driving around in a land barge, you know, carrying two kids and a terrier, you know, a $60,000 land barge gets 8 miles to the gallon. That's starting to wear on some folks, isn't it?
I think so.
Of course, you can't take away my Explorer, Joan, because that's my truck. I have my Explorer.
We'll let you have that.
Quick break. We got a lot more good stuff to come right after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride. We're going to find out what she has to say, what Kiplinger has to say about the avian flu and how what impact it could have on some very important industries. We're back at 17 till. Joan Pride is our guest. Joan, would you like to introduce this act?
Well, I know Eric Clapton is involved.
That's him.
Oh, I thought it was when he was with Cream or something like that.
No, I don't think so. That's Eric, and that's him on the guitar. That's him singing.
I'd leave my husband for him.
You're a big Clapton fan, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He also known as Derek, I guess, at one point in time.
Derek and the Dominoes?
That may have been Derek and the Dominoes version there. But anyway, he was Derek there, but he's really Eric. Joan Pride's with us, folks. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, I gave out my website earlier, so it's only fair that you give out yours.
Well, thank you. It's www.kiplinger.com.
And what do we find when we get there?
Gosh, you'll find a tremendous amount of stuff. Not all for free, but a whole lot of it is for free.
Yeah, it's a good site, folks. I encourage you to bookmark it and use it. I do all the time. And we got these publications, Joan, that I'm so proud to be a subscriber of. I'm thinking 35 or so years ago.
Wow.
You know, going into offices as a young pup salesman. Going into offices and seeing the Kiplinger letter laying in the, you know, on the desk, opened up, or in the inbox, or whatever, of these managers and executives that I would be calling on.
Right.
And that's my early memories of Kiplinger. Of course, they go all the way back to 1923, folks, the Kiplinger letter. And that one comes out weekly. Well, that's the one Joan and I work off of every week. And then they have three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. Did I get them all right?
You sure did.
And then there's a magazine that's on newsstands and also by subscription, Joan.
Yes, sir. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And I bet there's a telephone number in there somewhere.
You bet right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
I'm 10 for 10 here, folks, with the Kiplinger folks. Seriously, though, and they got a 30-day free trial, folks. I encourage you to check it out. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what Kiplinger's got going on, there's a big empty hole of information in your life. You got to fill it up with Kiplinger. Joan, the avian flu is at once one of the most interesting phenomenons going on and also one of the most frightening, isn't it?
Boy, there's no question about it. What scares me the most is the inability to contain it because of, you know, our being kind of a global village with air travel and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember, Joan, wondering why everybody was getting so excited about this. I mean, we had SARS and a couple of years ago, and that was a big deal. But everybody got excited about it. But we sort of, I don't know. It kind of ended. And when the avian flu thing started, when it seemed like they'd only just begun popping up in Asia, I'm thinking, why is the president making a major speech? And then when I saw this comparison that I've mentioned before, but I'm going to do it again. During the epidemic, the pandemic of 1918, the mortality rate, which that pandemic killed millions of people worldwide, with very few people really able to move around that much, killed 1-2% mortality rate. The mortality rate of when humans get this flu is 50%. Now that'll get anybody's attention. I mean, that's a mortality rate greater, much greater than the bubonic plague of the 15th century,
right?
Or the pandemic that we had in the early part of the 20th century.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
That had to be the number when somebody called George Bush and said, "Mr. President, the mortality rate is 50%. He said, wow, we got to tell people about this.
Yeah.
And they did. And so, but Joan, if there is something like that, you know what SARS did to several industries when SARS happened, the airline industry, it basically put the Air Canada into bankruptcy.
Oh, I had forgotten that.
Yep, it did.
Air Canada
literally went into bankruptcy because of SARS. I don't know whether I don't even know if they're still in operation right now or not. But
I don't either.
But look what that kind of thing could do to the airlines and the hospitality industry, Joan.
Right. Yeah, it's scary.
Now the good news is that it would have a bigger impact on the economy if we didn't have technology.
Oh.
Think about that, Joan. See, this is the kind of thing that you can't tell me that there aren't people putting extra money behind video conferencing and things like that to make it so that we can still do business, even if we can't travel and meet each other. What do you think about that?
It's interesting.
Does that make sense?
Makes total sense.
Yeah. So anyway, just something to think about, folks. If you're, we're not trying to, trying to frighten everybody here. But this is a real possibility when this virus mutates from and so that it can be transmitted human to human instead of bird to human, or bird to bird and then bird to human. When it goes the next step, all bets are off, aren't they, Joan?
Oh, absolutely.
And so you might want to make sure you can communicate with your folks wherever they may be, other than face to face. Joan, let's move all the way down to finance. Let's talk about the small banks at the bottom of page 2. This is good news. You got some good news here for banks, don't you?
Right. We're saying that Congress is going to be passing legislation soon that would make it easier for small institutions, thrifts, community banks, and credit unions to open branches in other states.
Yeah. And this is good news for small businesses, too, Joan. Because the healthier independent community banks, and I will also say credit unions, I don't mind saying that at all, the more that those small financial institutions can be healthy and they can expand and be competitive, the more good that is, the better that is for small businesses, Joan.
That's right. Absolutely.
You've heard me say before, my best friend in the world, in the marketplace, is my independent community bank. I've said it many times before, and I'll say it as long as I have breath.
Don't overlook them.
They are my business's best friend, and I even said that in my book. Tim Till, stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Don't go away.
Say I'll move to New York, New York's bad.
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out and subscribe to my free newsletter and my blog while you're there. And don't forget all the other things, the articles, the archives, lots of cool stuff there to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, over on page 3, you guys have got a great little block there on politics. One of the biggies, though, that I want to talk about is the possibility of the president having to accept limits in the Patriot Act in Congress. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the USA Patriot Act was approved after the terrorist attacks of 9/11, and part of it was designed just to get federal agencies communicating with each other better so they could share information so they could combat terrorism.
To take down the wall.
Right. And another part of the Patriot Act was designed to go after terrorists' money, to have banks watch terrorists more carefully or people suspected of being terrorists. But then there's a whole part of the Patriot Act that is controversial to some people because it appears to infringe on privacy rights, such as, giving the government extra permission to seize, say, your library records, what books you take out, things like that.
Where you go on the Internet, if you're looking at the bomb-making websites on the Internet and things like that. Well, the and I hear that. There's also the habeas corpus issue. Isn't there, Joan? Habeas corpus, being able to hold someone.
Yeah, try them or set them free, basically.
Exactly, that whole thing.
Charge them or set them free.
But I talked with Congressman Christopher Shays of Connecticut a year or so ago. And I asked him, they were talking about this, they were debating renewing it. And as you know, Chris Shays is no radical right winger. He's a Republican.
Not at all.
He's a Republican, but he's a New England Republican, and that means he's more to the middle than anything. And he's certainly no firebrand. And I said, Congressman Shays, what about the Patriot Act? He said, thank God we have the Patriot Act.
Uh-huh.
He said, it's the best thing that ever happened. And Joan, you and I both know, I mean, I think you'd agree with me that pulling down the wall, which was the metaphorical name for the barrier, the information barrier that had been put up between the CIA and the FBI, you and I think you'd agree with me that that was a mistake and that that needed to be fixed.
Oh, big time, yeah. That's very important for those agencies to all be able to share the same information.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And Joan, you know what? I believe that I don't know this for a fact, but my instincts tell me that one of the major reasons that we haven't been successfully attacked on our soil since 9/11 is because of the Patriot Act.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way.
What do you think? Do you agree or disagree?
Let me think about that.
Okay, we'll get back with
you next
week. We'll get back with you next week about that.
Yeah.
I expect a report. There will be a test.
Yes, sir.
Right, Joan.
Oh, no.
Joan, let's move on down and talk about health care. And you guys report that physicians will face more pressure to compete on prices. Joan, I think all health care providers are going to be doing that, don't you?
I think so. And boy, price competition is exactly what small businesses that are trying to offer health benefits to their employees really need.
That's exactly
desperately.
Right. And Joan, when you look at that, think about this. While the population is becoming more self-insured and becoming more likely to be a health care consumer rather than just an oblivious patient, as that happens, concurrent with what you were just saying, I think that's going to do more to bring down the price increases, hold the prices down, maybe even reverse some prices.
I mean,
if right now, Joan, if you walked up to a lot of healthcare providers and you said, I'm going to write you a check right now, you'll be able to cash it today, or here's the cash, forget the check, here's the cash, how much is that x-ray going to cost me? I bet you'd get a huge discount on the spot.
Probably, sure.
And that's happening in more official ways all across the economy, and more of that has got to happen. Joan, quickly.
Oh, sure, that's what we need.
Top of page 3, quickly, the
yes,
IRS.
Sir?
Tell us about that. This is your bailiwick.
Just be careful. If you're a small business owner, self-employed, sole proprietor, you have a better chance of getting audited. The IRS is really going after small businesses in a big way.
Merry Christmas, Joan.
Yeah, sorry.
Thanks. You're just trying to make us feel better, right?
You're trying to end on a positive note,
kind of,
right?
Warm our cockles here. At the end of the show. Well, it's just a reality, and we need to just pay attention, folks, and make sure that you don't you're not blindsided by anything. Joan, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
It's always a pleasure. And by the way, Joan, Merry Christmas.
Hey, Happy Hanukkah to you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Shalom, Joan. I'll see you next time.
Okay.
Joan Pryde, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back. I promise. Well, I got to go for this hour. As much as I don't want to leave you, I got to do it. But I'll be back tomorrow. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And you know, this program really is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.